Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. It's Todd Zwillick with you. Lying to the FBI is a crime. We already talked about that with George Papadopoulos and how he learned that. But what about lying to a jury under oath when the identity of a murderer is at stake? On July 11th, 2001, Larrick Sherman was shot to death outside the Taft Homes housing project in Peoria, Illinois. A man named Payson Long was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. He's had two trials. He's been convicted both times under conditions that Andrew Cohen says are constitutionally questionable.
The first time he was accused and charged of murder and convicted, the courts of Illinois threw out the case because of prosecutorial misconduct. The second time, evidently, the conviction is going to stick, even though there's no physical evidence linking him to a murder. There's no scientific evidence linking him to a murder. There's no confession. The only real reason he's in jail is because of the testimony of two people whose stories were particularly shaky, one of whom actually lied on the witness stand during the second trial and was not corrected in that lie by prosecutors.
Now, lying under oath is a crime, but who's responsible for pointing it out during a trial? That's the topic of this week's Case in Point from the Marshall Project. And Andrew Cohen says that while lying in court is common, prosecutors don't always step up if they know a lie might weaken their case.
Lying in trial happens. It happens more than we would care to admit. The system is set up to conceive of the possibility that witnesses are going to come into court and make statements that they want to make that are in their interest but not the truth. Theoretically, a prosecutor is supposed to stand up and say, wait a minute, you are now saying X, you said Y before, which is it? Or if there is reason to believe that an actual lie has taken place, to actually tell the jury before deliberations. The whole point of the trial is to give the jury the best information available. When that moment came in this trial, in Brooklyn Irby in the second trial of Payson Long refused to tell the truth, the prosecutor not only didn't say anything at the time to jurors, but gave the impression during closing arguments that she was not lying at all. To me, that's a constitutional violation and a prosecutorial violation that should give the defendant here some relief.
Why didn't Payson Long's defense attorneys argue that strongly and go to the judge and say, wait a second, this is a lie and the prosecutor knows it?
Well, they did. They didn't mention the prosecutor, but during the second trial, when this Brooklyn Irby incriminated Long, even though she had recanted her incrimination earlier, the defense stood up and they brought in an investigator, someone who was on the prosecution side, to say to jurors, yeah, it's true. She's not telling you today what she said before. But it's one thing for a defense attorney or a defense witness to make that statement, right, to a jury. It's another thing for the prosecutor to basically say that about his or her own witness. And in this case, the prosecutor, a woman, refused to essentially call out her own witness and clear the record in the case, and then compounded the effort during closing arguments by essentially endorsing the idea that the incriminating testimony was true when we know it wasn't. So this has been the subject of a recent ruling, the 7th U.S. Circuit Court, the federal appeals court that handles cases out of Illinois. And to me, it seems like this is a perfect case to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, because the court there, the justices in Washington, have been particularly interested lately in witnesses and trials and this sort of thing.
So, Andrew, one thing that you point out, which I think is intuitive to all of us, is that lying in court is not new. It happens all the time. There have been cases that we've heard of where somebody years after the fact comes forward and says, I can't take it anymore, I lied, and maybe there's a new trial or maybe somebody is exonerated based on that. This case is a little different because the lie and the knowledge of the lie happened within the same trial before the jury was even sent back for deliberations.
Yeah, that's right. Anybody could have cured it. The defense tried, right, with their witness, but prosecutors were silent. And there is a string of cases from the U.S. Supreme Court that says prosecutors have an affirmative obligation to correct a government witness when the witness has made a false statement. That didn't happen. And then the appellate court, the federal appeals court, essentially excused the prosecutor. You know, what's also missing from this equation is the judge. The judge knew that this witness had said something completely different in the second trial than what she had testified to the first time around. And the judge was silent about it. You would think at some point somebody would have chimed in before the deliberations began to say, listen, we want to clarify things for you. And to me, it speaks to the imbalance that takes place in a criminal trial. Prosecutors, I think, get far more of the benefit of the doubt than the defense, even though the law says that it's the defendants that are supposed to get the benefit of reasonable doubt.
Well, what have the prosecutors in this case said about their own conduct and whether they acted appropriately when Brooklyn Irby's testimony was known to not be true?
Yeah, well, they've defended themselves. They've said, look, it came out anyway. The fact that there were questions about the accuracy of this testimony were raised by the defense in a timely fashion. There was a witness, a law enforcement official who came to the stand and said, yep, Brooklyn Irby has this problem in this case, and that was enough. That was enough to cure whatever failings the prosecutors had made at trial in doing it themselves. My point is that for a jury in a criminal case involving a murder, for the prosecutor to say, look, this person is not really leveling with you, has far more import and impact than it would have coming from the defense. And I think maybe the conviction is proof of that. So we're waiting to see if this case goes, or at least is asked to go, to the U.S. Supreme Court. I tried to get in touch with the defendant's attorneys. They have no comment. But it seems to me, like I said before, this is a classic case that could go to the justices, who may want to clarify exactly what the duties are when the government's own witness comes to the stand and doesn't tell the truth.
A case of lying in criminal court, and whether prosecutors have a duty to notify a jury when they know that one of their witnesses is lying. Payson Long is in prison in Illinois waiting to find out the answer. And Andrew Cohen is bringing us up to date for the Marshall Project and Case in Point. Andrew, a pleasure as always.
My pleasure, too.
Hey, we always want to hear from you. Want to get in touch? 8778-MY-TAKE is the number. You can always tweet us at The Takeaway. And you can get to me, too, on Twitter. I'm at Todd Zwillick. That's Zwillick with the CH.
The Takeaway is supported by Staples, offering print and marketing solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, signage, and more. More at Staples stores or staples.com/print and marketing. Staples, it's pro time. And LegalZoom.com, providing legal answers to the day-to-day questions of small business owners through its network of independent attorneys, available nationwide. More information at LegalZoom.com/takeaway. The Takeaway will be right back. Want to bring us with you on the go? Subscribe to The Takeaway as a podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.